B-Pod Studios.
Farzetta and Trey in the morning.
One of the great reporters that was in that little mix with Doug Peterson yesterday, pressing him on the field goal, not taking no for an answer. He was a bulldog there in the media session. He's on the line with us right now. His name is Zach Berman of The Athletic. Zach, always great to talk to you. Good morning, buddy.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Zach, what the hell happened yesterday? I don't just expect Doug to say, you know what? Yep, my goof, my bad. I made a big mistake here. But to try to defend as much as he did a fake field goal in that situation was just bonkers to me yesterday in the press conference.
Yeah, I actually thought it was relatively benign. I got the sense he didn't want just the repeated questions on it because from his perspective, it was fairly binary. It either worked or it didn't work, and it didn't work. I was more curious the thought behind the play. You know, even if it did work as they hoped, I still don't think the upside would have been worth pulling off the fake field goal in that situation. That's why I asked, what yard line were you expecting to get at and how much time were you looking to have on the clock? They were trying to set up at least two shots, or I guess at most two shots at the end zone. And frankly, I don't know if it's worth it there because the expected value is probably just a shorter field goal. I'm all for being aggressive on that same field. You know, 2 years ago, they had a tight end throw to a quarterback on a 4th-and-1 at the goal line. I just thought the time of the game and the time of the and the place on the field, it wasn't worth the upside of the play.
I'm 100% with you there. I agree with you. The only thing is, I will not fault Doug for being aggressive when it's a 4th-and-2 midfield like he had in that game as well. I will fault him for being crazy aggressive when it comes to a fake field goal when you're getting the ball back at halftime. So that, to me, is what it will be the thing that's just undefensible or indefensible for a guy like Doug Peterson. When it goes a little further, though, and you look at how this team hasn't scored a point on the road in the first quarter, and what I've been harping on today, it seems like now for a second straight year, this team has really struggled to get out of the gates with some semblance of a high-flying offense or a quick-strike offense or even sustaining long drives in the first quarter. Why do you think it is that the Eagles have struggled so much in the early goings of games?
It's a major issue. As you said, it was an issue last year. What's even more concerning right now is that Doug Peterson made this a talking point during the offseason. He emphasized throughout the offseason that they need to start games faster, and they're in the same situation now. There's a few things you can look at. One thing that has come up is the fact that they defer when they win the coin toss. Doug Peterson said he'll reevaluate that. I don't think that's the problem. But when you're looking at first quarter scoring, if you give the ball to the other team and they drive down the field, you know, for 7 minutes, you have limited amount of time on the clock. I would still defer, but I understand why it's an issue and why he's reevaluating it. You can look at the scripted plays. Scripted plays don't always go as scripted. For instance, the first play the other day was supposed to be a play action shot downfield that they killed because of the look. Frankly, I just think it comes down to the players. You know, they need to make plays. And you're seeing penalties have been a problem last year or a problem this year, missed assignments. The reality is that, you know, we can talk about the coaching all we want and that the game planning is a big part of it. The game is won by players and players need to execute there. You need to convert third downs. You need to make third down stops on defense, and they're not doing enough of either of them right now.
And when you talk about those players, speaking with Zach Berman from The Athletic, and I know I'm always one to go players before I go coaching, but it seems like it's been such a consistent problem over the last 2 years, I have to stress more of the coaching. But let's look at those players for a second. What are they supposed to do as wide receivers on this team when they just don't seem to be good enough? Are they not getting coached up? Is the quarterback not trusting them? Or is their talent level just where it's going to be now for the foreseeable future?
Yeah, the talent level is certainly something to look at. I think overall it's the lack of speed. You take DeSean Jackson out of the lineup, you're losing really your fastest and your only legitimate deep threat. Nelson Agholor can stretch a defense, but it often comes from the slot as opposed to the outside. But I think you need to look at roster construction there. And the Eagles really have emphasized size at wide receiver, when a lot of other teams, you know, for instance, Kansas City is focusing quite a bit on speed. And, you heard when the Eagles drafted J.J. Arcega-Whiteside, there's different ways to get open. It's not always with speed. You can size someone up. You can win contested catches. And that is accurate. And Arcega-Whiteside might go on to be a very productive receiver in the NFL. But when you look at kind of roster duplication, he's very similar to Alshon in terms of the size skill set. And I just think the Eagles have a general lack of speed. When you see Miles Sanders make plays in the open field, it's because of the speed and the elusiveness. And when you look at the Eagles receiving core, and they can say Matt Collins has a good 40 time and he does, I just don't think you're getting enough downfield plays from this offense, and that's really stunting them right now.
Zach, our poll question today centers around fans' confidence in Doug and whether it's wavering or not. So my question to you is, having been around him all the years that he's been here, two things, and I'm talking in-game in both of these. What are his best in-game qualities as a coach and some things that you question in-game qualities as a coach?
Yeah, that's a good question. I would say his best in-game qualities as a coach, I think, are adjustments as the game goes on. Coming out of halftime is one thing, but I would just even say as the game progresses, kind of figuring things out as they go through. So that's in game. And then I think you need to look at start of game situations, whether it's the scripted in terms of the weaknesses, whether it's the scripted plays or just how he's getting this team ready to play in games. I think that's really the issue. I think Doug Peterson's best strength as a coach is really coming Monday to Saturday, more so than game days.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think what he does well on game days is make those in-game adjustments.
Speaking of Zach Berman from The Athletic, the other part of this I want to focus on, because the Eagles suffered, as it seems like every team in the NFL does, right now from a lack of, I don't know, awareness as to what pass interference is or isn't. And then last night, more officiating trouble with the Green Bay Packers versus the Detroit Lions. Trey Flowers being called for two hands to the face penalties that were not at all hands to the face. If you're in the league office, and I know this is a very broad question, Zach, but how do you get this right? Because it seems to be an overwhelming majority of people thinking that the NFL officiating is the worst it's ever been this year.
Yeah, so you look at pass interferences in particular, and the NFL instituted this rule change here, or the ability to review them, really as a reaction to a missed call in the NFC Championship game last year. I think it was one of those things that worked in theory, but not in execution, because they are not overturning pass interferences, or they're not changing those calls. Doug Peterson said yesterday, I asked him if he's resigned to keeping the challenge flag in his pocket. And he basically said that's going to be the case. Timeouts and challenges are too important. And with pass interferences, when you look around the league, they're not getting overturned. If it's something that they really feel they need to throw the flag on, they would. But look at the Nelson Aguilar play on Sunday. They didn't do it. When you speak about, you know, kind of the hands to the face and different things like that, the NFL is kind of walking both sides of the stick. You know, you want competitive games. There's also this big focus on player safety. Anything close to hands in the face, anything, you know, that has to do with hitting the quarterback, those are generally going to be called. So that's, I think, the sticky area there is the product versus the player safety element of it.
Zach, with the struggling play of Rasul Douglas and Sidney Jones on Sunday, and it looks like the health getting better for Mills and Darby, and I'm not sure about Avante Maddox, but who do you see starting in the secondary against the Cowboys on Sunday night?
Yeah, so it's a little too soon for me to say that, because I need to see how Jalen Mills gets through this week in practice. My guess is you'll still see Douglas and Jones for the majority of the snaps on Sunday night. I don't say that with a ton of confidence right now, because, you know, but I say that simply because, you know, they're going into the week healthy. Mills and Darby obviously are their Super Bowl starters, or were their Super Bowl starters. I think when those guys are healthy, they're going to be starting here. But Jalen Mills hasn't played a game since London last October. So you can't expect him to go out there in Dallas on Sunday night and play 70 snaps. I don't think they're expecting that either. If they can get some type of rotation going like they had in week one, I think that's probably what they would do in the short term. Mills, and I heard you talk about it, Bob, before I came on. Mills was under criticism before the injury last year.
Right.
I mean, you look at the Tampa Bay game last year when DeSean Jackson runs deep. There were time and time again last year where I listened to you guys' show and Mills was under scrutiny. So I would kind of pump the brakes on Mills being what saves them. But he is a solid starting cornerback. And as Jim Schwartz said, there's not a parade down Broad Street without Jalen Mills. So I think that will help. If Darby's healthy, he can really help them. He hasn't been quite right yet this year. I don't think there's an easy solution with the cornerbacks, and I think that's a problem because until they show that they can stop teams deep, teams are going to throw deep. And I think what the solution needs to be is kind of what they adjusted to in the second half of last year, playing a lot of off coverage, forcing opponents to take it 12-13 plays downfield, trust your red zone defense, hold them to field goals instead of touchdowns.
Speaking with Zach Berman, last thing for you, just going into Dallas, your early expectations against the Cowboys Sunday night. I know it's only Tuesday, but as of right now, are you expecting the Eagles to win that game?
If Amari Cooper's healthy, I think they're going to have a much harder time winning this game. Mm-hmm. I mean, you saw what Cooper did down in Dallas last year. If Cooper's not healthy, I really like the Eagles because I think that the Eagles can stop Dallas's run. They've perennially been one of the top run defenses. And I don't know if Dallas will have the skill guys on the outside to really test them. So I think that's a major injury to monitor here. I think the Eagles are going to be able to move the ball some. They have been able to do that against Dallas in the past. But the question is going to be whether they can stop Dallas' passing game. And if Cooper's on the field, they're going to have a hard time doing that.
All right. Zach Berman from The Athletic. Always great catching up with you, man. Thanks so much for coming on with us today.
Anytime. Thanks for having me on.
97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.